Welcome to the Euro Auto Training Garage Spiel Podcast. Garage Spiel Podcasts are brought to you by your friends at Baum Tools Unlimited and Stallwilly Tools North America. Learn more at www.baumtools.com and www.stallwilly.com. Baum Tools Unlimited and Stallwilly Tools North America are proud to underwrite the Garage Spiel Podcasts. This is part 7 of our 8-part interview with Dennis Simonitis, Road and Track Magazine's engineering editor. In this episode, Dennis talks about federal emission level standards and where our current cars fit, and speculates on where we might get our fuels in the future.
Let's talk about diesel for a second. There's been a lot of discussion, and I think a lot of meaningful discussion about, well, why not have these diesels in America? You know, here we have a way, and boy, I certainly agree with this. We have a way of improving fuel economy on every SUV on the road by 20-25%.
Absolutely.
Bang, like that.
Yep.
How do you do it? You make it a diesel.
Yep.
The fuel's out there. Mm-hmm. People know how to use it. Is it equivalently good from what Americans hold dear of transparent and quiet and non-smelly and all that? Yeah, it's, you know, a modern diesel is really, really a good engine.
It's pretty good.
It's quiet.
Yeah.
And you don't even have to say relatively speaking. It's
right.
Quiet, period. Is it clean? Relatively, yes. And there I'm going to keep relative. But it is still, it's cleaner, certainly. And it is relatively clean. You know that story about the bin, tier 2, bin 5, and all that jazz?
No.
In the complications of emission controls,
yeah.
The federal standards, they're really complicated. And I don't pretend to know all of this. But the federal emission levels were set up in various tiers to come over time, so the automakers had a phasing in of cleaner and cleaner and cleaner vehicles. And then within any tier, there are what they call bins, you know, B-I-N, 1 through 10.
Okay.
Getting increasingly clean going to 1.
Okay.
So that tier 2, which is what we're in now in this progression, tier 2, bin 5, is sort of an average gasoline engine.
Okay.
It's out there today.
Yeah.
The further you go, the lower number in bins, the cleaner you are. Tier 2, bin 2, is, I know this new Prius.
Okay.
You know, the Prius V, the big one.
Yeah.
Is a tier 2, bin 2. The smaller, more fuel-efficient Prius, I don't know, but might be a Tier 2 Bin 1. Certainly any electric car is Tier 2 Bin 1.
Okay.
Any fuel cell car, the Honda Clarity, would be a Tier 2 Bin 1.
Okay.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
And at the other extreme, a Tier 2 Bin 10 might be something like, a big classic V8 SUV.
Okay.
Or pickup or something like that.
All right.
Okay. But the important point to pull away from all this is Tier 2 Bin 5 is average gasoline.
Yep.
Just average. Plenty of gasoline cars are Tier 2 Bin 4, Bin 3.
Okay.
The clean diesels, generally, clean diesels, including the urea ones, are generally Tier 2 Bin 5, i.e. in the middle.
Right in the middle.
They're right in the middle.
Okay.
So they're clean. They're not as dirty as a big VA.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not as clean as a Honda Accord gasoline car.
Okay.
Or certainly not as, which is a conventional gasoline car, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
Nor they're nowhere near as clean as you know, the average hybrid. And the best of the hybrids are cleaner yet, are way over in the tier 2 bin 1 and bin 2 area. And see, the manufacturers required each year among its fleet, it's required into having certain percentages in
each
certain
bin.
Bins. I don't know, or minimally so.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So they can build some tier 2 bin 10s, provided they have some tier 2 bin 2s and 3s to balance them off.
Got it.
And this is where the automakers get into advanced technology with something like hybrids, where they get into smaller cars versus bigger cars and so on. And where they build credits for beating the standard and they lose credits for not beating the standard, and they're allowed to trade credits from manufacturer to manufacturer, and they're allowed to balance credits among their own vehicles. So it becomes, boy, it's a lot more complicated than I understand. I've had it described to me, and I probably told you everything I know, and some of the stuff I know is probably wrong. I mean, it's really quite complicated.
Well, it's real complicated.
The specialists in each automaker,
yeah,
and the specialists at place like at EPA really, you know, sit down and study these things, and it's a non-trivial thing.
So with all the complexities, the political complexities, the technological complexities, what do you think the landscape, the automotive landscape, is going to look like in 50 years? It's a long ways
50
out.
50 years, yeah, yeah.
And, you know.
Uh-huh. Well, curiously enough, I addressed this very point, as you may remember, within, I don't know, the last 10 years. Yeah,
okay.
Last 10 years. I did a piece around 2001 called Whither the Automobile, and I asked that same question, 50 years.
Yeah.
And I talked to really smart people. Curiously enough, and this is interesting to me, automakers are thinking about that seriously.
Sure.
They have guys who, you know, three or four guys who sit around and, makes them sound like they're just goofing off. Guys who study social patterns, who study urban patterns, obviously who are knowledgeable about technology, to come up with answers to that. So let's see. A couple things come to mind, because all I'm going to do is sort of try to remember what I wrote and what they said. I remember one thing the Honda guy said. They said a substantial number of cars in 2050 are still going to be internal combustion.
Huh.
And, you know, we shouldn't be so surprised. That's
sure.
40 years away.
Yeah.
Subtract 40 from 11. And what do I get? I get 70. I'll drive around now. I see a lot of 1970s cars driving around.
That's
so
right.
What's the buzz, you know?
Sure.
2050, they're still going to be. And today's cars are so much more durable
right.
than cars were 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Of course a 2010 product is going to last until 2050. And the 2015 product and so on. So yes, there's still going to be a significant number of internal combustion cars. What are they going to be fueled on? That's a nice, really broad question.
Right.
Because certainly a component of them is going to be, I don't want to call it conventional hydrocarbon, but, you know, kind of conventional hydrocarbons.
Yeah.
Stuff, fossil fuel.
Fossil fuels, yeah.
Because, you know, fossil fuels, the wonderful line, the Stone Age did not end because of a lack of stones. You know, it ended because there was something better. And by the same token, the petroleum age is not going to end because one day we all wake up, we say, oh, no more petroleum, what am I going to do? It's slowly but surely, we're seeing it already, the idea of peak petroleum production.
Production, yeah.
So it's generally considered by a lot of people that if we're not there already, we're certainly approaching it. Now, peak doesn't say we're out of it. It says we're halfway there.
Right.
But on the other hand, you know, you go back to 1970 and the club, or I guess in the 80s, the Club of Rome said 2000. It hits the fan in 2000. No more fuel after that. Forget it. Well, 2000 came and went, and I still found fuel, so
yep.
It was not a big deal. Didn't find it on January 1st because we're all closed. In any case, so they say, okay, we're still going to have conventional IC cars, certainly. They might be fueled with some conventional hydrocarbons. Probably by then, hydrocarbons are going to be too valuable to burn. You know, we want hydrocarbons for cosmetics and you know, medical purposes.
Sure.
There are a whole bunch of things we use hydrocarbons yeah. for besides fuel.
Tupperware.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Sure.
Yeah,
yeah,
chemical uses, sure. So why, we shouldn't burn the stuff, we should use it for these other things. But there will be unconventional hydrocarbons from just a zillion sources. Think of all the work that's going on right now with coal to liquid, and it's called CTL, coal to liquid,
yeah.
and also GTL, gas to liquid. The latter takes natural gas and fools around with it, turns it into a liquid. You can see why it's better than just using natural gas, which we already do. It's denser,
mm-hmm.
and it's easier to put on board because it's a liquid, and it gives you more bang for the buck for the volume, and therefore it's better. So that's why gas to liquid makes any sense. We have lots of natural gas. no one has ever talked about natural gas peaking.
Right.
It ain't going to peak. We're finding more of it. You know about the Marcellus play, the thing in, through central Pennsylvania, or underneath,
yep,
like New York to Pennsylvania to West Virginia, and there's so much natural gas there, it frightens you. And we also have lots of natural gas, lots of places. And we're finding ways to exploit it. So, any case, conventional engines using perhaps unconventional fuels. Hey, there was a thing in New York Times quite recently. Some guys are working on using man-made photosynthesis to have sunlight, kind of like it does with leaves, producing stuff. But this case, it's going to be a thing that you put sunlight, you put some water, and it produces hydrogen. So,
yeah.
Okay, where are we going to get the hydrogen? Not a problem. We already have it, by the way.
Yeah.
We already have loads of hydrogen. And by then, there will be, obviously, a lot of fuel cell cars, yes, because it's so efficient.
Yeah.
And remember that thing about some cars for some uses? Hydrogen cars have fuel cell cars. Fuel cell electrics have some real advantages for long range and because of their quick refill.
Yeah.
Battery cars, sure, we're going to have electric cars, of course. Have BEVs, but battery electrics, because they're perfect for short run, relatively short range, taking all of the emissions and putting it in one place, namely the power plant. And that's advantageous. Because you're no longer trying to monitor millions of these mobile sources. You only have to monitor relatively few, thousands, but relatively few power plants.
Right.
And that's easier to do. How do you generate that power? Interesting. God, we could go on for 3 days on that. From coal? Because we have lots of it. What do you do with the CO2? Oh, I can think of 12 things to do with it. And not only I, the smart people think of things to do with it. The best one is algae.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Using pond scum, taking sort of intelligent pond scum, adding water, and you can use the most brackish of water that has no use. Can't be used for agriculture. It's just water, but brackish as could be. And you mix it with this pond scum, and you expose it to sunlight, and you get out of it something from which you can derive fuel. And that's coming. That's already here in research. And sort of mini pilot stages. So that's certainly going to come.
Be sure to check out the rest of our interview with Dennis at www.euroautotraining.com.